Welcome to Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And I'm delighted to have Ralph Nader as my guest today, hopefully. Ralph calls in. I don't believe he's called in as yet, but hopefully he will momentarily. Oh, I think Ralph needs no introduction, but let me just tell you a few things about him. A few things that maybe some listeners aren't too familiar with. Ralph became very prominent going back in the mid-1960s, 1965, when he published a book called Unsafe at Any Speed. It's actually on display at the Henry Ford Museum today. But back then, it was a book discussing the reluctance of car manufacturers to install safety features, things we take for granted today, like seatbelts. But Ralph is, along with that, he's for over 4.5 decades. He's been a longtime consumer advocate. He's a lawyer. He's an author. Time magazine voted him one of the 20th century's most influential Americans. Make that the 21st century as well. He's organized millions of people, formed over 100 public interest groups. He was instrumental in enacting OSHA, the EPA, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the Safe Water Drinking Act, and a lot more. In 1969, he founded the Center for Study of Responsive Law, then later Public Citizen Interest Research Group, Public Interest Research Group, Public Citizen, and other citizen action organizations. And in his spare time, he's also been a 3-time presidential candidate, most recently in 2008. Do we have Ralph on? No, I guess not. Not yet. Hopefully Ralph will call in. Oh, my goodness. The topic for today, we decided, would be corporate fraud, crime, and abuse. What better topic than that? Ralph has spoken out about it. He's written so much about it during the time that he's been so active over these past decades. And there's never a shortage of that going on, but we certainly have it, let's say, in overdrive today with the current so-called global economic crisis in full bloom. And we've said a little bit on this program that this did not happen by chance. This was engineered to happen. And the idea that we will come out of this easily and soon, I think, is pretty preposterous. Wonderful. Ralph, I'm delighted to have you on the program.
Thank you very much.
Oh, it's I gave you a big introduction. You missed it. But no sense going over it again. You know who you are. I just wanted to be sure listeners knew all the things that you've been involved in for about 4.5 decades.
Thank you.
But I guess we decided with Patrick that we'd talk about corporate fraud, crime, and abuse today, and that's something you're very familiar with. You've spoken out so much about it and written so much, and there's a lot of it going on. So we've got a few commercial breaks along the way, one coming up momentarily, but maybe you could begin, Ralph, and when you hear soft music, we'll take a break and then come back. Let me let you start.
Sure. Well,
here's the music.
Okay, we'll come back.
Here's the music. We'll take a short break and come back and get into, oh, my God, the overflow of corporate fraud, crime, and abuse. We'll be right back.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Ralph Nader. Ralph, a quick comment. Last June during the campaign, I wrote about you. I don't know whether you spotted the article or not. I called a choice in November, Nader v. Tweedledee or Tweedledum, and the Tweedledee or Tweedledum, I believe, was terminology you've used along the way. And I followed Obama. I expected nothing out of him. I certainly didn't expect change. Obviously, we wouldn't get it with McCain-Palin, but I really expected very little from Obama. So it's no surprise to me that the big handouts to corporations continue in larger amounts than ever before. And to me, this is pretty serious crime. The people who got us into this mess are being rewarded with trillions of dollars of our money. But this, we've had corporate handouts going back forever and ever. And again, you've talked about this, plus all of the malfeasance that goes on. But you're the expert, so let me turn you loose and dive right into this.
Well, I mean, the obligations now of the U.S. Treasury, namely the taxpayer, for the Wall Street collapse and the corporate crime wave and speculative binges and the self-enrichment of the bosses, the obligations now are over $12 trillion. That includes outright subsidies to the banks like Citibank and J.P. Morgan Chase, etc., Bank of America, Wells Fargo. It includes loans, and it includes a guarantee of the failure, say, of $300 billion of toxic liabilities for Citigroup. That was done in one weekend, by the way. Overnight, on a weekend, Robert Rubin, who pushed the deregulation of the banking and financial giants in 1999 under Clinton when he was Secretary of Treasury, he came to head to be one of the heads of Citigroup, made a ton of money in a few months in the year he resigned, like $40 million, consulting fees, became co-director. He tanked Citibank, Citigroup, with his policies and condoning the speculation. And then he went to Washington over a weekend with his buddies in the Treasury Department and Federal Reserve and got a $304 billion guarantee, billion-dollar guarantee. Just to give you an example, the Department of Education budget is about $50 billion and another $20 billion in preferred stock. So not only has this all been done largely without congressional participation, without any taxpayer consulting in terms of public hearings, but it's been done in the dark recesses of the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department, often on weekends, where they release a press release on Monday. Massive mega weekend bailouts of corporate crooks in Wall Street. And there's hardly been a demonstration by taxpayers or workers or investors or debtors, small debtors, anywhere in the country. And so what it really signals is how weak our democracy has become. And to make matters worse, there hasn't been really a symmetrical expansion of prosecution of these corporate crooks by the Justice Department. Now, there's a bill in Congress to significantly increase the number of prosecutors and lawyers and investigators in the Justice Department for what they call as financial crimes and fraud. But it's still only a small measure of what's needed. We need several billion dollars in criminal prosecution resources in the SEC, Securities Exchange Commission, Justice Department, etc. And they'll be more than pay for themselves in terms of the fines that they could exact, giving these corporate crooks their full due process.
Ralph,
so there's a lot of work to be done here, but it's not going to be done unless people, spend a little time on their citizen duties and become a little more organized in each congressional district to focus on the Congress, where the reform movement can start.
Oh, absolutely. We talk about this in this program all the time. We bring on an array of economists and people who tell the truth and explain what's really going on. There's no question that people need to get mad about this and realize, my listeners do, there's no question about that, realize that what's going on affects us personally. They're putting their hands in our pockets and they're stealing our money. And if we don't get mad about it, they're just going to keep their hand there and take it until they get it all.
Let's see how angry your audience is. I'm going to make them an offer. I'm going to offer to send them a free copy of a hardback called, or a softback, doesn't matter, called The Cheating of America, which documents how people are ripped off, especially through the tax system, by the, it was produced by the Center for Public Integrity. All I would like from them is just to put $3 worth of stamps to cover the postage. We'll give you this book free. And the address is, just call this, the address is Free Book, P.O. Box 19367. 19367. Think of the, if you're in a car, think of the year 1936 and just add 7. P.O. Box 19367. Washington, D.C. That's easy to remember. 20036. 20036. Just free book. And just for the postage. And the postage has gone up, unfortunately. Just for the postage, we will send you this book. If people do not have a higher estimate of their own significance in controlling this country of ours as citizens, as is ensconced in the Constitution, which starts with the phrase, we the people, the preamble. It doesn't start, we the corporation. Then it's just going to get worse. And when people don't demand to say, they're going to pay, and pay. So there's no excuses for most people. Just a letter, an email, a call to your senator, representative, thousands, hundreds of thousands around the country. You let them know that you're watching them. You let them know that you want to see them when they come back for their town meetings, and you're going to ask them questions. And then just from that individual effort, who can't write a letter, make a phone call to the local district office from of your congressperson or senator, or send an email? And that begins the process. Then pretty soon you link up with others in your neighborhood, and you link up in your community. Pretty soon, the members of Congress will be more afraid of the people than they are of big business. And remember, with all the power that 1,500 corporations have to get their way with a majority of 535 members of Congress, who, by the way, put their shoes on every day like you and I do, they don't have a single vote. These corporations don't have a single vote. We're the ones that have the vote. But we don't focus it laser beam-like. We don't give it a cutting edge. We don't condition it because we've given up on ourselves largely. You know, you can't fight City Hall. The big boys will get away with it no matter what. That kind of defeatism, that kind of resignation is exactly what the power structure banks on. So we have to change it. No more excuses for any of us. You know, all of us can do something, however small, and it adds up. Just like the Mississippi River is made up of a lot of drops of water. And eventually there'll be Congress watchdog groups in every congressional district, say 1,000 people who make it their civic hobby to watchdog Congress instead of being part of a bowling league or a bridge club. And those 1,000 people in each congressional district has over 600,000 people in it, throwing in $200 a year, opening two offices with two full-time people to do their regular advocacy work, and spending 200 hours volunteer for 4 hours a week on the average. Those 1,000 people advancing the long overdue changes in our country on health care, on living wage, on cracking down on corporate crime, on cutting government waste, on public transit, on renewable energy, all these things that are ready to go on the show, and with some pilot projects around the country already proving their merit, can happen. You turn Congress around, you turn the executive, you turn the judiciary later around as well. Congress is the most powerful branch of government under the Constitution, but it's never used its power. It loves to send the war declaring power to the president and other things. So that's where it all starts. So let's hear it from you to Free Book, P.O. Box 19367, 19367, Washington, D.C., 20036, and just put in $3 or $3 worth of postage, and it'll be on its way to you. That's one way I'm going to gauge your audience.
Well, I have my fingers crossed, Ralph, that people will respond. Let me add one thing to what you said. If people didn't jot down the number for whatever reason or get a digit wrong, get hold of me through Republic Broadcasting. That's the easiest way for people to do it. You can also do it through globalresearch.ca. Get hold of me either way, and I'll get you this address, and you can get the free book for a few bucks in postage.
It'll really motivate you, too, because it'll get you angry.
It should get us angry. It should get us angry. And yeah. It's amazing, Ralph. People say to me all the time, I'm only one person, what can I do? Well, as one person, if we really were the Lone Rangers sitting out there, there's nothing we can do. But in numbers, we could do everything because we really are the superpower that the big corporations and the top government officials worry about, and they pay attention to us. When we contact them, they tabulate all of this.
Exactly.
And they use formulas to figure that everyone who responds on whatever topics, however they do it, there is so many more sitting out there equally concerned, and they worry about it. And when there are enough of us doing these things, this is what becomes the burr in their saddle that gets them to do things they never would have done otherwise.
Yeah, in fact, there's a modest credit card reform bill that's just passing the Senate. It'll pass the House. Obama will sign it. And that's due to all the emails and outrage of people getting ripped off on penalties, overcharges, retroactive interest in their credit card transaction. So it does work. You just got to believe.
Oh,
roll up your sleeves.
The banks can borrow money at 0% interest, but people have to pay 20% interest on their credit cards. It's pretty outrageous.
Exactly.
We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Ralph Nader. Ralph, we endured eight mean and nasty years under George Bush, and I live in Chicago, by the way. I remember I didn't go out and party on November 22nd by any means, but Chicago was about the same as Times Square on New Year's Eve. There was a mass celebration that just shut down the city. It really got going in the evening, but celebrating the election of Obama. And I just shook my head and I said, these people don't know what they're doing. This guy is going to just continue the same policies. And I became very activist in my retirement. I became an accidental writer and an even more accidental radio host. And maybe that's an incentive for people who say, I'm just one person, what can I do? Well, I'm just one person, too, and I sit at home in front of my computer, and I do all of this, including this radio program. And I know I'm reaching people across the country and across the world. Well, you don't have to write, you don't have to host a radio program, but, Ralph, as you say, we all can do something. We can get together with other people, we can join groups, and we get mad as hell and not want to take this anymore, and we sure better soon enough.
Yeah, well, you know, the election of Obama was a huge relief after this criminal Bush-Cheney regime. That was part of the outburst of enthusiasm and filling the streets with joy. You know, Obama has an easy act to follow, as I said in a letter to him late last year, and that should not be a source of complacency. It's pretty easy to look better than Bush and Cheney. All you got to do is say you're going to shut down Guantanamo. You are not going to arrest people without charges and imprison them without attorneys. And you're not going to allow some of those environmental restrictions that Bush and Cheney issued near the end of their notorious term last year that caved into the polluters and the desecrators of our public lands, corporate desecrators of our public lands. And you look pretty good. But we've got to get over that. We have a huge backlog of injustice to remove and to remedy. And we've got a lot of long overdue directions, many of which people in Europe and Canada take for granted. They have universal health care. In Europe, they have decent pensions, decent wages. They can form trade unions more easily. They have paid maternity leave, paid sick leave, family sick leave. They have terrific daycare compared to our, you know, on-again, off-again services, et cetera, here in this country. And they have near-university free tuition. So, yeah, they pay a little more taxes, but look what they get for it. And the anxiety that's eliminated from their daily lives. Will they be able to get their children through college expenses? Will they be able to have the operation or get health care without bankrupting them, etc.? So even if they have health insurance, never mind the 50 million people that don't have health insurance. So on that standard, Obama's faltering. He's had now two meetings in the White House on health insurance, and the industry is there, the drug companies, the HMOs, the medical device people, the trade associations, the concessionary think tank people. But he doesn't have the single-payer advocates. You know, that's the majority-supported reform. Full Medicare for all. Everybody in, nobody out. Free choice of doctor and hospital, public funding, and private delivery of health care. And it took a reporter exposing, just before the White House meeting a few weeks ago, with 120 people that Obama invited, there wasn't a single one, a single payer. So they finally invited at the last minute two single-payer advocates. Then there was a big roundtable discussion by the Senate Finance Committee a little over a week ago, and guess what? There wasn't any single-payer advocate at the table. There were 15 witnesses, but not one single payer. Yesterday, Obama had a meeting in the House, in the White House, of the stakeholders in the healthcare area. The stakeholders. So he had the medical device people, the drug companies, the hospitals, the doctors, labor. But guess what? Not one representative of patients. I guess, 300 million patients are not stakeholders. So it's very disappointing. The problem that I saw with Obama a long time ago is that he's a political coward in most instances. He does not like to take on power. He doesn't like to take on the military-industrial complex and cut that defense budget, which is so bloated and wasteful. That is the military-industrial complex was the phrase Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, used to warn the American people about not letting it go into excess in his farewell address. And there are just so many other things. So the whole liberal progressive establishment has very little leverage over Obama because they have signaled to Obama by not supporting campaigns like ours, progressive presidential campaigns, that they got nowhere to go. So the minute Obama knows that X millions of liberals are never going to go to the Republicans, never going to support a third party, he doesn't have to give them the time of day. So he's never met with all these citizen groups that have millions of dues-paying members, Common Cause, ACLU, Public Citizens, Sierra Club, you name them. There are thousands of them here, prison reform groups. He's never met with them. Yet he's met with right-wing corporatists. He's met with right-wing commentators like George Will and Charles Krauthammer and so forth. And that just indicates that if we don't have a political lever on Obama, he's going to be corporatized day by day.
Oh, indeed, Ralph. We have to break again. It's the reason I refer to his administration as George Bush's third term. Aside from a few things around the edges, I don't see a lot.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Ralph Nader. Ralph, back in during the campaign, I think I was very definitely in the minority. I viewed Obama as the most dangerous candidate because people really thought that he could deliver something different than what we've been through for the past 8 years. They forget what we got for 8 years under Bill Clinton. Well, he didn't invade another country, but he certainly continued some very, very hostile activities, especially against Iraq, killing 1.5 million people with sanctions, continuing bombings that really got reported in the news. I found nothing to cheer about during A. Clinton years. Bush certainly ratcheted things up to a terrible level. But people expecting that we would get a great change with an Obama administration. This guy is very smooth. He's intelligent. He's a good speaker. He's very able to deceive people to believe he's something he's not. And I think one example, well, we see what's been going on for the past few months. But the most recent example, he just gave a talk. I guess it was a talk. I don't follow the corporate media reports, where he talked about we have a healthcare crisis. Not that we're not delivering enough of it or well enough. We're spending too much money. So the way to fix this crisis is to deliver less, not more. And there's no question he's got Medicare in mind. He's got Medicaid in mind. And he's also got Social Security in mind. Well, how on earth do you pay for bailing out bankers and funding the largest ever military budgets in our history, spending as much or more than the rest of the world combined, unless you take it out of the benefits that people are getting, including Social Security, health care, and the rest? Well, this is what they have in mind, so they want to cut it. People need to realize this. And one more thing to get mad about, Ralph.
Yeah, well, look, from his viewpoint, let's take it from Obama's viewpoint. Let's say he was listening to this program. One thing he'd say is, do you realize what I inherited from the Bush-Cheney administration that restricted what I could do? I mean, right off, huge deficits before the bailout. Then the bailouts by Bush and Cheney in September, October, that set the stage. And then the recession, then the growing unemployment. And then he said, well, I passed the stimulus package, $700 billion, extending unemployment compensation, food stamps. And he'd say, and I just sent a bill to Congress to get rid of those tax havens and those offshore Bermuda, Grand Bahamas, tax escapees that corporations and super rich people are availing themselves of, so they have to pay their fair share of taxes while they still receive the government services here at home. Well, he's going to have another complaint. It was not well received by some of the leading Democrats, this getting rid of these tax havens overseas, these tax escape jurisdictions. Senator Baucus, who going to be the key guy in the House on this issue, said, oh, well, we'll look at it. What do you mean we'll look at it? He's been in the Congress for almost 40 years. He started out as a progressive from Montana. He's now a corporatist. And he's the guy who had that round table the other day where there was no single-payer advocate at the table and 15 witnesses, which was, by the way, challenged by some doctors and lawyers in the audience, and they were carted away arrested for disrupting Congress. There's no charge for buying Congress, which is what those lobbyists sitting in that same hearing room in the Senate Finance Committee do every day. By the way, their website, the key website, is singlepayeraction.org. So you want to see what real direct action, real serious advocacy for full Medicare for all, instead of these cockamamie plans that are not going to solve the problem at all and are going to create even more inflationary prices for your health care. It's singlepayeraction.org. You can get involved, sign up, make a contribution. But when doctors and lawyers are willing to be arrested because they stood up in the audience and basically said, Senator Baucus, where is the single-payer advocate, which is supported by a majority of the American people, majority of nurses, majority of doctors, and majority of health economists? And that doesn't even have one seat at the table where there are 15 seats with 15 other witnesses representing drug industries and health care industry, et cetera. So he doesn't really have the full support of a Democratic majority in Congress. Now, he didn't have any excuses for the kinds of people he appointed. He appointed a lot of Clinton retreads, Larry Summers, for example, and the people in the Treasury. Are not the kind of people that, you know, are supposed to reflect change and hope. They're the old order, the old Wall Street order. So he should have appointed. Now he's appointing the heads of the regulatory agencies. Some of them pretty good. The Food and Drug Administrator, Dr. Hamburg, looks like a pretty good one. Looks like they're going to appoint a pretty good person to OSHA. But by and large, the person they appointed for the Auto Safety Agency is very concessionary, very, very close to General Motors. And the least he could have done is, and nobody could have stopped him, is to, with a Democratic majority, to confirm these appointments. He should have appointed real change-oriented people, consumer-oriented, tax reform-oriented, corporate reform-oriented. He didn't do that. So it's not entirely a bad scene with Obama. He has done some pretty good things. But by and large, unless he arouses the public back home, he's got to keep saying, you want me to do XYZ for you people? I can do XYZ, but I'm not going to get anywhere unless you march and demonstrate, unless you put the heat on your members of Congress, unless you put the heat on those big businesses with all those brand names, General Electric and General Dynamics and General Foods and Colonel Sanders and so on.
I would love to hear him make a speech like that. I think I would literally fall over in a dead faint. I mean, the president has the bully pulpit. He has a bully pulpit that nobody else on this planet has, and he can command the TV networks to give him prime time for a nationwide speech, even though they might hate him if he's going to say the wrong things. But he can get that airtime, maybe not on all of them, but one or two or whatever.
But not only that, he is the biggest consumer in the world. The government procurement budget is hundreds of billions of dollars. And besides military armaments, they buy almost everything we buy. They buy cars, they buy paper, they buy food, they buy construction materials, they buy telecommunications, they buy software. And so simply by saying to these corporations, I want to advance consumer innovation as safer cars, more fuel-efficient cars, more recycled paper, dropping chlorine, I want to advance different kinds of food safety practices, because I'm the customer. I'm your biggest customer. I buy in huge amounts, and the customer is always right. So he's got to make a big speech with that bully pulpit on government purchasing standards that are going to advance not only the taxpayer's desire for efficiency by competitive bidding and putting the government contracts online, full text, so anybody in the country, scholars, taxpayer groups, you name it, reporters can analyze these contracts with these corporations, these giveaways. And I'm going to set standards so that the products the government buys are going to be less polluting, more recycling, they're going to be more innovative, they're going to be more consumer friendly, etc. That's an example. Nobody can stop from doing that. The customer is always right, and Uncle Sam is the biggest customer. And Uncle Sam can negotiate drug discounts by having Obama repeal that ban on Uncle Sam negotiating volume discounts for the drugs Uncle Sam is paying for, the elderly.
The way the
Pentagon and the VA, the Veterans Administration, have been able to do for years. But the Republicans and Democrats in Congress, a few years ago, when they enacted the drug benefit bill, which had a big donut and so on, they actively prohibited Uncle Sam from negotiating volume discount. That can be repealed. He's got to be more high profile on that. He hasn't been high profile enough on that. 99% of the people would support that.
Oh, indeed. I'm a veteran. I can go to the VA, and I don't use many drugs, thankfully, Ralph. But I can go to the VA, and way back, I could get a prescription on any drug that they carry. They don't carry them all, but any drug that they carry, and they sure carry a lot of them, at one time it was $2 a prescription. The last time I went, which was a couple of years ago, I paid $8. It didn't matter what it was. It was a flat $8 charge. And you could go to the corner drugstore and pay $100 for what you could get from the VA for $8. But as you say, Medicare Part D, which I am on, you are on it, I believe, we can't do that. They have this silly plan that I did not sign up for because I thought it was a total fraud for somebody like me that doesn't use very much to get a petty discount that doesn't amount to much. And this bill that enacted Medicare Part D, passed in the middle of the night because it was so horrendous, and it actually failed on the first vote. But arms were twisted the way they do things during in the daytime or at night or any place else, and they got a few votes to switch to get this horrible bill passed that never should have gone through the way it was.
Right.
So seniors were screwed out of not being able to get cheap drugs.
And the key legislator in Congress that got this through, Billy Tauzin from Louisiana,
had a fun.
The minute he got it through, as you know, He jumped ship, resigned from Congress, took a $3 million a year job to run the drug industry trade lobby in Washington, D.C. See, that ought to be grounds for bribery. And, we've got to get much tougher with all this money going to the members of Congress in return for favors. They've got a very clever way to avoid it being called bribery. We need to redefine it because that's really what it is. In fact, there was a long time ago, there was a broadcaster, an NBC broadcaster, who called it a deferred bribe.
Deferred bribe, revolving door. It's got lots of names, Ralph. And another name comes to mind for me, former governor of Michigan, Michigan John Engler, head of the National Association of Manufacturers. I don't know what he makes, but he's making a heck of a lot more than he made as governor of Michigan. And Billy Towson, indeed, head of the pharmaceutical organization. I wrote about him in an article I wrote about health care. And he loved the initial idea that Obama was putting forward, by the way, because Big Pharma would continue to charge high prices. And if Obama could somehow bring everybody mandated to have health insurance, Towson said, which I quoted, that half the prescriptions that are written by doctors aren't filled because people can't afford to pay for them. So he'd be thrilled to death if they had a program that everybody had to be on covered by health insurance. I don't know how you do that, but if everybody was, then all of these prescriptions would be filled, and the drug companies would make a lot more money.
That's right. And by the way, the drug companies are benefiting from huge taxpayer research and development that discovers and tests so many anti-cancer and other drugs, and under government policy, they got to give it away to one drug company or another, like Taxol. Taxol was discovered and tested clinically with $31 million of taxpayer money, your money, through the National Cancer Institute, which is part of the U.S. government, part of the National Institutes of Health. It was then given free under a monopoly marketing license to Bristol-Myers Squibb, with no reasonable price provisions for the patients not to be gouged, and no royalties on the profits back to Uncle Sam, so they can relieve the taxpayer in the research budget. So a woman in 2000, about 9 years ago, writes me a letter. She lost her $19,000 job. She had ovarian cancer. She went to the doctor. Lost her health insurance, went to the doctor. He said, it's very serious, and all I can recommend is Taxol. She said, well, I don't have any health insurance. How much is it, doctor? The doctor said, well, Bristol-Myers charges $14,000 for six treatments. $14,000 for six treatments. Bristol-Myers Squibb did not pay a penny to discover and test that drug before it got a monopoly right to market it and keep all the profits. So how many people can get angry when they listen to the story? That happens in a lot of their drugs. The drug companies take credit for discovering drugs they never discovered. They were given free by the National Institutes of Health or the Walter Reed Bethesda Hospital entity in the Pentagon that has discovered and tested drugs, and they also have to give it free. Although once a drug company was so grateful to the Walter Reed doctors and scientists that they had a ceremony where they gave them a plaque of gratitude. They gave them a plaque to hang on the wall. That was an anti-hepatitis drug. So, how much are we going to take? What's our breaking point? When are we going to start supporting candidates outside the two major parties instead of going for the least worst? When are we going to take charge of our country so we have something that we're proud of to pass to our children and grandchildren?
And that's the reason you decided three times to get into the presidential race, if for no other reason than to have another voice explaining all of these outrages that we may not be thrilled about them, but we take them, and we do pathetically too little to fight back and demand the rights that our government should be doing for us, but they're not. And they're not only not doing them, they're stripping away more and more and more. I have no doubt in my mind that the plan going forward is to literally reduce benefits down to the minimal few, if any, at some point in the future. And a line that I like to use, and I don't say it lightly, I really believe this, that there is a scheme to turn this country into Guatemala, to militarize it, to turn it into a police state, we're practically that right now, and to strip away benefits, and to turn workers into serfdom. Look what's happening to the automakers. What are those workers going to have left? When Chrysler's already bankrupt, GE is practically bankrupt. By the way, I saw a bulletin this morning, and there must have been some bad news about GM, that its stock dropped to $1 a share. $1 a share. GM, once the biggest company in the world, I guess, and its stock today dropped to $1 a share.
Yeah, well, that's another big story. Why is Obama pushing GM to bankruptcy? For example, it has 18% of the domestic car market. That ought to be enough to supply, you know, to sustain a smaller and profitable GM. Why is they pushing it to bankruptcy? Why do the top bosses at GM are now saying, well, it's not so bad a solution? Well, because they want to get rid of their dealers. They want to break the UAW, even though they'll give the UAW shares. Shares in what? A company that's bankrupt. And all these communities around the country are going to be suffering now. Who's going to buy cars from a bankrupt company? And still, it isn't Congress that's making this decision. It's the Obama administration through a secret task force run by a Wall Street guy, Steve Rattner.
Oh, indeed. Ralph, we have to break again in a final segment. We'll be right back.
This is RVN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour, on with Ralph Nader. Ralph, I'll make a final comment, and then you finish up the hour. It's been a terrific hour with you, and I hope you'll come back and do it again. But as a final incentive to listeners, you're an amazing guy with your ability. You could have had a top job in a big corporation or whatever and made an awful lot of money, become fabulously rich. And instead, you decided to devote your lifetime to become a powerful consumer advocate. So nobody pays you seven-figure salaries and multi-million-dollar bonuses, and people get mad at you for what you're doing. The people that you go after with your consumer advocacy, and in the introduction I mentioned going back to 1965 and Unsafe at Any Speed, and the many organizations you founded, didn't list them all, plus the OSHA and EPA and all the rest. Well, my goodness, what a lifetime of achievement that is. Well, most of us can't do that. But that ought to be an incentive to let people know that we can do an awful lot more than we think. I'm just an ordinary guy, and look what I'm doing.
You're right. They can do a lot more than they think. They sell themselves short. They give up on themselves, and that's very bad, because the history of America is when enough people get aroused and demand change and demand justice, things happen. It happened in the drive against slavery, the women's right to vote, the rights of workers in the early Industrial Revolution, forming trade unions, the agricultural rebellion of the farmers, the populist revolt in the late 19th century. These were ordinary people doing extraordinary things. They put their foot down. That's what we've got to do. Stop looking at screens. So many screens every day, 40, 50 hours a week looking at these screens, TV, computer, video games. Look what's happening to our younger generation. They're spending more time in virtual reality than in reality. And so we've got to ask, what's happening to us? How do we straighten ourselves out? How do we take control of our government? How do we make these corporations adjust to our civic values of health and safety and access to justice and protecting future generations and the environment? It doesn't take that much time. If people would just, the majority of people spend zero time on their civic duty. They will volunteer once in a while, but that's charity, which is good. But I mean, civic duty is trying to make city hall, state government, federal government, big business behave better. If they would just spend 1 or 2 hours a week connecting with all these citizen groups that are begging for their involvement. We have thousands of very good citizen groups all over the country, environmental groups and anti-poverty groups and tenant rights groups and consumer groups and labor groups and prison reform groups and you name it. And they want your participation as part of enjoying life. Life without advocating justice is not fulfilling. Daniel Webster, the senator from Massachusetts back before the Civil War, he said, justice, the great work of human beings on earth. Without justice, you forget about freedom and liberty. So we've got to be participants. Marcus Cicero, the ancient Roman orator, once said, freedom is participation in power. That's the best definition of freedom I've ever heard. How much power do you have? How much freedom do you have if you don't participate in power in your neighborhood, your community, state, nation, world? And people know far more than they're applying to make a better life for all of us. They know far more.
Ralph, those are great thoughts to go out on. That music means that we're wrapping up and they'll break away for the next program, but I just want to thank you for coming on. We could keep this thing going all afternoon. There's no question about that. And that always pains me when the hour is over and we have to break away. But again, many, many thanks for coming on. I do hope we can do this again because you've got so much to say that people need to hear. You inspire me. I know you inspire people listening to this program.
Well, thank you. You keep up the good work, and we'll thank your audience. And those of you who want that book, The Cheating of America, you can get the address on the program's website.
Oh, indeed. I'll get hold of me, and I'll give it to you. And we will be back tomorrow with more important programming. Join us then.